Welcome to McGuire on the Wire, where you'll discover top stories and strategies in specialty tax broken down by our experts. You'll also meet leaders from across the firm who will discuss McGuire Sponsel's approach to common challenges faced by our clients.
On this week's episode, guest host Jerry Hamill is joined by Sean King to discuss the latest on global tax reform. They dig into some of the recent proposals, both globally and in the United States, and what taxpayers and global business owners can expect to see in the coming year.
Hi, this is Jerry Hamill, a shareholder with McGuire Sponsel. And today I'm sitting here with Sean King, our Global Business Services Lead, and just really curious about tax reform and getting Sean's take on both global and U.S. implications. And so very fortunate to have Sean here today. And maybe before we start on some of the U.S. implications, Sean, maybe you take us through some of the global landscape and what's going on around the world, which really also impacts and maybe drives some of the policy in the U.S.
Well, that's great, Jerry, and thanks for having me. It's very good to be here. Appreciate you having me. And it's interesting, Jerry, there's a lot of noise right now on international tax reform around the globe, both here in the U.S. And abroad. But it really predates some of this post or hopefully soon to be post-pandemic dialogue. You know, it's interesting that much of the conversation has stemmed from coming out of the pandemic, emerging from the pandemic, the many different stimulus packages that countries introduced worldwide during the pandemic to keep their economies afloat, to keep cash in their respective marketplaces. Mm-hmm. And of course, when you do that, when you spend money to do that, you have to pay for it. And so we're seeing a lot of conversation around, you know, what is largely viewed as post-pandemic international tax reform. But the reality is that much of this dialogue on international tax reform, it long predates the pandemic. I mean, we look back now, you know, I think where we first really saw the original signals of countries around the globe getting on the same page together was the OECD's BEPS initiative, the Base Erosion and Profit Shifting Initiative. And, you know, to me, a guy who does this every day, it still seems like it was yesterday when BEPS was introduced. But the reality is now it's almost about 10 years ago when the BEPS conversation first started. Why do I tell you that? I tell you that because BEPS then became a conversation around sort of its progeny, if you will, ATAD, the Anti-Tax Avoidance Directive, ATAD 1, ATAD 2 in Europe. Those are initiatives that long predated the current state of conversation around international tax reform. Today, the big noise, the big news, and that's gaining mainstream media attention is this global minimum tax initiative. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Janet Yellen and many in the current administration were very proud and very excited to share that the United States had signed on to this agreement of more than 100 countries to enter into a global minimum tax. And I can tell you that in the hours and days that followed after the agreement, my phone was ringing off the hook. I had clients thinking this goes into effect January 1 of next year. Is this something that we immediately have to adjust to? And the truth is that there's still a very long way to go on global minimum tax. We don't necessarily know how that will be implemented. Most observers and practitioners think that it will be some sort of top-off tax. So if you had a U.S. multinational owning an Irish subsidiary that's paying 12.5% corporate tax in Ireland. The global minimum tax rate is set at 15%. Well, there'll be a 2.5% top off to get you up to that 15% minimum tax on that entity's earnings.
Okay.
But we don't know yet, Jerry, if that's actually how it will be implemented, nor do we know that we'll ever really get to agreement because, as I mentioned earlier, BEPS, you know, 10 years have gone by now, and the multilateral instrument on BEPS has been entered into by hundreds of countries, and the U.S. is still not a party to it, right? So as we learn from history, and it's why we study history in school, we learn from our history, and the history tells us that these things don't happen so quickly, and in many cases aren't ever fully implemented. So we sit here 12 years or 10 years post BEPS, and the U.S. never became a party to BEPS. So query whether the U.S. actually ever becomes a bona fide party to this global minimum tax initiative. But why do we talk about it? Why is it interesting? Why is it instructive? Because I think that things that came out of BEPS have influenced domestic policy here in the U.S. And we look at the GILTI regime, for example. Mm-hmm. GILTI is largely born out of some of the principles of BEPS and substantive planning and trying to curtail passive income planning and deferral planning born out of activity that has no genuine economic substance. And so that is a great example of why we pay attention to global tax conversations, because even if we're not a party to them, they can instruct and they can be helpful in having a sense of just where domestic policy here in the United States might go. So don't hold your breath on the Global Minimum Tax Initiative. We'll see if it ever really comes to fruition, at least from a U.S. standpoint. But it is helpful to us in advising and educating us on where our domestic tax policy might go here in the coming weeks, the coming months, or even over the course of the coming years.
Hmm, that's interesting, Sean. So a lot of noise going on globally, and that background kind of gives us an indication of maybe its influence on U.S. tax direction. So there's been a lot of discussion about tax reform, a lot of activity going on. I know it's constantly changing, but what are some of the highlights in some of the proposals that exist today?
So the House Ways and Means proposal, Jerry, is the one that we really pay attention to, and there's a reason for that. If you're a bit of a Constitution geek or a bit of a wonk on policy, which I know you are, all tax legislation in the United States emanates from Ways and Means. If it doesn't emanate and come out of the House Ways and Means Committee, it can't ever become law. That's where the policy starts, and then we go through reconciliation and we pass in the Congress, we pass in the Senate. But the House Ways and Means proposal has outlined a number of different policy proposals and potential changes that could come into effect as quickly as January 1 of next year. Now, a long way to go here in the coming weeks to see if that would actually come to fruition. And as you know, in Washington, we never want to try to purport to have a crystal ball. But theoretically, there are proposals that are baked into the House Ways and Means report that would go into effect January 1 of next year. And those include rate changes. Those include changes to the GILTI regime that I mentioned earlier, foreign tax credit changes and the way foreign tax credits are calculated, merging of GILTI and Subpart F, interest expense limitations, FDII, even BEAT, which applies to obviously your larger global multinationals. But the proposals as currently offered up are far-ranging and could have a significant amount of impact on various multinationals doing business around the globe.
Okay. Well, I know GILTI's gotten a lot of attention since 2017. Is there anything you can share in terms of some of the details of the proposals as it relates to GILTI?
Sure. So the proposals go to rate changes in one respect. So the Section 250 deduction percentage for GILTI would be lowered from 50% to 35%. So if you were to take that with a proposed corporate tax rate of 26.5%, so increasing that corporate tax rate, mm-hmm. you lower the GILTI deduction, you would yield a new GILTI rate of 16.5%, or roughly 16.5%. So that's interesting because if you'll recall back under the TCJA of 2017, or so-called Trump tax reform, we had at that time what was largely known as the carrot and the stick. And the carrot was FDII, right? That's our foreign-derived intangible income, which is largely a bit of a misnomer. It doesn't necessarily just apply to intangible income. It's more of an export incentive for C corporations. But the carrot was FDII. The stick was GILTI, right? And so what we're seeing now in these new proposals is that the stick in GILTI actually gets a little bit worse, and the GILTI rate goes up. And meanwhile, the carrot of FDII, that benefit of the FDII or FDII deduction, actually goes down under these proposals. So stick gets a little more harsh, and carrot becomes a little less enticing. And so that's one of the pieces that we're keeping an eye on, simply as a result of rate changes, which is a fairly simple mechanism to move the needle there, but that's born out of rate changes.
Sure.
There are other pieces to GILTI that are also proposed to be changed, and I actually think that they, if implemented, could have a larger implication, and I'll give you two of them. One of them is that GILTI inclusions would now be calculated on a country-by-country basis, and I think that's a fairly seismic shift.
How would, Sean?
Well, what it would do, Jerry, is it would cause you to aggregate your tested income, your qualified business asset investment of your taxable units within a single foreign country, and not being able to aggregate those. So tested losses in one country would not be allowed to be offset or to reduce the GILTI inclusion attributable to tested income in another country.
So they want to create these silos country by country.
Well, that's exactly right. And it's important because there has been a lot of planning around this within the GILTI regime since it came into effect there January 1 of 2018. So we have been able to engage in planning for many of our clients that would allow us to use losses to offset against GILTI inclusions, essentially by mixing those together or blending those pools together. If we now move and calculate on a country-by-country basis, that would have a real change and an immediate impact from an operational standpoint and cash flow standpoint on many multinational companies. So that's one way in which GILTI would change.
So that seems like a significant change, Sean, and it raises questions for me in terms of, let's say you have an aggregate loss carryover. Well, how do you then move to silo that in light of this change?
You would think there'd have to be some transition rules, right, Jerry?
And
it's a great question because it dovetails with the broader acknowledgement I should make or would have made at the end of the program. But that is that much of these proposals are heavier on rhetoric and policy and lighter on implementation details. And we've seen this since the TCJA. As you'll recall, that legislation was somewhat hastily drafted towards the end of 2017. It was drafted in a few weeks, largely.
Sure.
As we approached the end of 2017, came into effect January 1 of 18. And so what have we seen since? What we've seen since is a number of regulatory pronouncements over the trailing couple of year period to try to get everybody to interpret properly and report properly for what was now law as of January 1st of 18. So we're almost going back down that same path again. We have these proposals. We don't know if they will come to fruition here in the coming weeks. If they do, they'd go into effect to start next year. And what would we have? We'd have very little regulatory authority to enable us to properly interpret and implement the legislation, and for our CPA friends to properly report for that legislation. And you see, you look no further than your Form 5471s, for example. I talk to CPA firms around the country on a daily basis, and they all sort of lament the fact that every time they fill out a 5471 now, it looks a little bit different every compliance season. It's growing and growing and growing. The reason for that is that there's this regulatory lag where we're trying to keep up and adjust for what has been done in the primary legislation. So to your point, we're going down the same path. We are at risk here of passing legislation for which there's no meaningful regulatory guidance, and we'll probably be cleaning up after the fact on a going forward basis.
So another situation where the guidance is frantically trying to catch up with the legislation enacted.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So we see that. That's one of the big pieces of GILTI, this country by country reporting or country by country calculation. The other piece is that I think is noteworthy is what is essentially the merging of subpart F and GILTI.
Yeah, what does that mean, Sean? When you say merging subpart F and GILTI, it seems like those are two ingredients that don't blend together.
So subpart F is our seminal anti-deferral regime that has been around since the Kennedy administration. It's nothing new to practitioners who do what I do on a daily basis. It has long been our anti-deferral legislation. And then along comes the TCJA in 2017. And introduces GILTI for the first time. And GILTI is at its core sort of this Uber version of subpart F. It's sort of subpart F on steroids, right? It takes components of subpart F and makes them even grander and more punitive than they ever were before. But they have lived now for the last few years, they've sort of lived in parallel. And as much as they're very closely related, in many situations, they're also very incongruent. And so there has been a great deal of conversation around getting those two anti-deferral regimes on the same page. And so that's what some of these proposals are designed to do, is to effectively merge some of the provisions of subpart F and GILTI. So for example, foreign-based company sales and services income that's currently taxed as subpart F income would be taxed as GILTI tested income. And so essentially what you'd have here is a number of the exceptions to subpart F income that we've long relied upon would effectively go away. So almost like a merger of companies where one is the surviving entity. So you have sub F and GILTI merging, mm-hmm. with GILTI being the surviving party. So many of the exceptions to subpart F that we have used for years, or our clients have used or capitalized upon, would effectively go away. So on total, Jerry, not a very taxpayer favorable proposal to have those two provisions merge, and GILTI being the prevailing party, because we're going to lose some of those subpart F exceptions that we've long seen and long enjoyed.
So from my standpoint, the merging sounds like it would be a simplification, a little more clarity, but the devil's in the details. Taking away some things that don't always catch the headlines, but it could negatively impact taxpayers.
Well said. So you certainly, from a political policy and a politics standpoint, and I always say all these things apolitically, Jerry, I have no skin in the game, but from a policy standpoint, from a salesmanship standpoint in Washington, you sell that as simplification, taking two regimes and simplifying. The reality is that it could only further complicate an already very complex area of law.
Okay. Well, thanks. That certainly is a deep dive into GILTI. Any other significant implications from a domestic standpoint?
I think one of the other ones I obviously mentioned earlier, FDII and the FDII benefit being reduced. So that's one to keep an eye on. Again, the carrot and the stick. And if the GILTI inclusion becomes greater and the FDII deduction becomes less, again, not a very taxpayer favorable proposal. And then the last one I think I'd share with you, Jerry, is our so-called participation exemption, or our dividends received deduction. Mm. This also came into play under the TCJA in 17. This is our Section 245 Cap A deduction, where you receive a distribution, a U.S. parent company receives a distribution from a foreign subsidiary. If you're a U.S. C Corp, you can now exclude that from inclusion in your U.S. taxable income. That was never the case before. As you'll recall, we've long been on a worldwide income system here in the U.S. Now, the Section 245 Cap A provision essentially turned that on its head for the first time ever, moved us to more of a territorial income regime. And if you were to pull a distribution home from a foreign subsidiary, then you could exclude that from your U.S. taxable income. But to get into the weeds for a second, the risk of being a little hyper-technical, that deduction currently applies to what we call specified 10% owned foreign corporations, SFCs. And so if you are a U.S. multinational parent, C-Corp, owning 10% or greater in a foreign subsidiary, you would get the benefit of that 245 Cap A deduction. The proposal would limit it to just distributions received from CFCs, controlled foreign corporations, which is greater than your 50% ownership. So obviously what's happening there then is it reduces the number of distributions received from foreign parties that would be eligible for this deduction, right?
So a significant change.
A significant change, and the number of U.S. multinational parent companies that would be eligible to avail of the Section 245A dividends received deduction would be reduced significantly. You would see far less of the ability to avail of that exception.
Well, I haven't heard a lot of positive things for taxpayers in this discussion, Sean. So I guess my question, my closing question is this. I don't want to lose sleep over this. Should I? I mean, what's the likelihood or prospects that any of this will come into fruition?
Yes. Well, I don't want to be the Grinch, Jerry. I'm just the messenger, so don't blame me. But what I would tell you is that, as you know, in Washington, it's very complicated. There's a lot of bartering that goes on. There's a lot of back and forth, and I won't belabor much of what it's easy to read about in the news, with the balance of power. And we have someone like, Joe Manchin in West Virginia that, is maybe holding some of that balance in power, in his hands. So I don't want to get into some of those political wrangling conversations, because we've all probably read about that, more than we care to do. What I would tell you is that there's a long way to go with a lot of this legislation. There is midterm elections now right around the corner that start to hang in the balance. If we get through this month and we head into next year, and now you start to look at the fact that there's a new election year afoot, and people do different things when they have to go home to their local constituents and be held accountable. So hard to really read the tea leaves and predict. What I would tell you is that a few years ago, mid to early December 2017, I would never have predicted that the Jobs Act at that time would have come to fruition in such short order. It did.
So your crystal ball was broken, Sean?
My crystal ball was broken forever, Jerry, and I'm not going to bring it back out today. But I will tell you that I think there's a long way to go with much of this legislation. We've already seen a watering down of it in the last few months. It's watered down compared to where some of the initial rhetoric was. So to see it watered down even further in the spirit of compromise would not at all surprise me. But if we saw some of it turn around and come to fruition here over a short couple of weeks, that wouldn't necessarily surprise me either. So a long way of answering your question, no, don't lose sleep. No, I don't want to be the Grinch. But it is something that, as practitioners, we all need to keep a very close eye on. We need to keep our finger on the pulse. And any of this legislation could be enacted into law at any time. And as we've said earlier, could have significant ramifications for our clients.
Well, very good. So I'm not going to get an affirmative prediction from you. But, Sean, very helpful. Appreciate your time today. And as usual, very informative.
Thank you for having me, Jerry.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any questions about what was discussed in this episode, please reach out to Sean Keene directly. Link to more resources on this topic and Sean's contact info can be found in the show notes.